First Baptist Church of Redmond, September 26, 2021, Ecclesiastes Chapter 9, The Best You Can.
Please rise and join me in reading Ecclesiastes 9:10. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. For there is no activity, planning, knowledge, or wisdom in Sheol where you are going. You may be seated.
You can. And you have to be saved because the best thing that you can do is find Jesus Christ as Savior. That's what Nicole Cliff did. She's famous, Nicole Cliff, you can look her up. But she became a Christian on July 7th, 2015, after what she called a, quote, very pleasant adult life of firm atheism, unquote. The idea of a benign deity who created and loved us, she writes, was obviously nonsense. And all that awaited us beyond the grave was joyful oblivion. I had no untapped, unanswered yearnings. But she describes her conversion this way. First, I was worried about my child. One time I said, "Be with me," to an empty room. It was embarrassing. I didn't know why I said it or to whom. I brushed it off, moved on, and the situation resolved itself. I didn't think about it again. Second, I came across a writing of John Ortberg's obituary for Christian philosopher Dallas Willard. John's daughters are dear friends, and so they have always struck me as sweetly deluded in their evangelical faith. So I read the article. Somebody once asked Dallas if he believed in total depravity. He said, "I believe in sufficient depravity," he responded immediately. "I believe that every human being is sufficiently depraved that when we get to heaven, no one will be able to say, 'I merited this.'" A few minutes into reading the piece, I burst into tears. Later that day, I burst into tears again. And the next day, while brushing my teeth, while falling asleep, while in the shower, while feeding my kids, I would burst into tears suddenly. She read more Christian books, and every time she cried all over again. She emailed a Christian friend and asked if she could talk about Jesus. She writes, quote, but about an hour before our call, I knew I believed in God. Worse, since I was a Christian, I was crying, constantly thinking about Jesus because I had begun to believe Jesus really was who he said he was. So when my friend called, I told her awkwardly that I wanted to have a relationship with God, and we prayed. Since then, I have been dunked by a pastor in the Pacific Ocean while shivering in a wetsuit. I have sung "Be Thou My Vision" and celebrated communion on a beach while weirded out California's tiptoed around about me. I go to church. I pray. Even after accepting Christ, I cry a lot. I read a news article that literally sunk me to my knees at how broken this world is, and yet how stubbornly resilient and joyful we can be in the face of that brokenness. My Christian conversion has granted to me no simplicity. It has complicated all of my relationships, changed how I feel about money, messed up my persona. She ends, obviously, it's been very beautiful. Trusting Christ is transformational. That's what our Sunday school lesson was about, transforming into something, somebody like Christ. Let me read the verse again. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. For there's no activity, planning, knowledge, or wisdom in Sheol where you are going. Let me talk about terms first. The word Sheol is not a synonym for hell. It doesn't mean hell, but simply refers to the place of the dead. All people die, and whether you go to heaven or go to hell, good or evil, you go to the grave. Martin Luther said it well. Sheol is the hidden resting place outside of the present life where the soul departs to its place. He simply is saying that we're all going to die. If you can't tell it yet, Ecclesiastes, Solomon, is possessed with death. And that when we do, it will be the end of all our work on earth, the end of everything we know about what is happening in the world, and the end of all our earthly pleasures. That means, number one, time is short. Because even if you live 70 years, which is 10 more than I have lived, even if you live 70 years, it's getting shorter all the time. In fact, the right kind of enjoyment will prove to be one of our best preparations for eternity. Our earthly pleasures are telling us that we're made for another world. Every honest day's work brings us one day closer to our eternal rest. Every good meal is a reminder that we have been invited to the last and the best of all banquets, the marriage supper of the Lamb. I again saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift, and the battle is not to the warriors, and neither is bread to the wise, nor wealth to the discerning, nor favor to the skillful, for time and chance overtake them all. Ordinarily, we would expect things to go well for people with strong abilities. Often they do, but having speed or strength or smarts does not guarantee our success. Solomon even mentions five kinds of people that one would expect to be winners, yet sometimes turn out to be losers. Let me talk about two terms. Time. This noun is used of the proper concept of the proper or appropriate time. This nuance is applied to the time God has appointed. So God is sovereign. It's easy to miss, but this has the meaning of the sovereignty of God. And we talked about that last week. We've talked about it in previous weeks. But the sovereignty of God, God is in charge. We do God's bidding is so much a theme of Ecclesiastes. God is sovereign. God is going to do with us what he wants to. So you can't fight against God. Chance. Almost every occurrence of this word means accident. In this verse, Human efforts and hopes are often thwarted by unforeseen and unpredictable factors that can befall anyone. For indeed, a person does not know his time, like fish that are caught in a treacherous net, and birds caught in a snare. So the sons of mankind are ensnared at an evil time when it suddenly falls on them. From the rest of verse 12, which talks about an evil net and an evil time, it's clear that when Solomon talks about chance, he is not talking about something good that happens, but something bad. In a fallen world, many unhappy things happen every day, from natural disasters, environmental catastrophes, to military conflicts and economic downturns. This too I saw as wisdom under the sun and impressed me. Solomon now gives a different response. He commends the relative value of wisdom, earthly wisdom, telling us to live wisely. He does this first by giving us the example of somebody who was wise and then comparing wisdom to several less advantageous alternatives. There was a small city with a few men in it, and a great king came to it, surrounded it, and constructed large siege works against them. Although some commentators treat it as a parable, most of the people that I read said that Solomon is recounting anonymously a true story. So he doesn't name it, doesn't give specifics to it, but I think it's a true incident that happened. It was something Solomon had seen for himself. But there was found in it a poor, wise man, and he saved the city by his wisdom. Yet no one remembered that poor man. Sometimes one wise man is enough to save a metropolis, a city. In this particular case, Solomon does not tell us how he did it. I wish he would tell the story, but no. Nor are we likely to figure it out because, according to verse 15, no one remembered that poor man. He never became famous. Yet the fact remains that this wisdom saved a city. So I said, wisdom is better than strength, but the wisdom of the poor man is despised, and his works are ignored. Solomon proved this by making several comparisons. In verses 13 through 15, wisdom was exemplified. In verses 16 through 18, wisdom is prioritized. He loved to show the relative value of something by claiming one thing was better than another. Here he says, wisdom is better or more valuable than physical or military strength. That's unusual for a king to say. But wisdom, God's wisdom, is better than to be strong or to have a good military. Fortunately, the poor man who saved the city was able to get people to listen to what he had to say. They must have been desperate for one voice, the voice of a poor man, to make sense. It was not working out this way always, however. Sometimes people refuse to listen. to the words of wisdom. This has all the more true when the words of the wise are actually heeded. If we are wise, the lesson is, we'll listen to wise counsel. The words of the wise are heard in calm, are better than the shouting of a ruler among fools. Verse 17, the scribes, a loud mouth leader. We've all seen it, haven't you? Coaches can be loud-mouthed. Friends can be loud-mouthed. They tend to demand attention. They tend to demand to be heard. And we're likely to listen to somebody if they yell. Yet, we know that the loudest voice is not always the wisest voice. In fact, usually it is not the wisest voice. This particular man got his own way by shouting down everyone else. Not that his adversaries would have given him good advice anyway, for he was surrounded by... Ever heard of a yes man? They say, you're right. You're always right. You always say the right thing. But you don't always say the right thing, do you? No, I make plenty of mistakes. I make more mistakes than usual, maybe not. But it's not good to be surrounded by people who never question you, because an advisor is supposed to give counsel. And if you don't give correction, you never learn wisdom. It happens all the time. A man tries to rule his family or run his business or take control of a church from throwing a weight around, usually doing a yacht of yelling or even cursing in the process. How easy it is for one proud or angry man to wreck a marriage or divide a church. But there's a better way. Solomon commends it. A wise man does not feel the need to do a lot of shouting. He knows it is not the loud word that moves people's hearts and changes the word world for good, but the wise word. Thus, he lets the wisdom of what he says speak for itself. And as a result, his quiet advice is always worth hearing, aside, even if it's not always followed. Wisdom is better than weapons of war, but what one sinner destroys much good. This is especially true in times of conflict, both interpersonal and national. With apologies to Teddy Roosevelt, we might paraphrase verse 18 by saying, speak softly and do not carry a big stick. Solomon is not denying there is a timer for war, nor is it denying the usefulness of weapons when it's time to fight. But he is saying that wisdom is superior to weaponry. I've been saying for the past couple weeks that life is like a tapestry when viewed from the inside, from the obverse. You can't see how beautiful it is from our side, but from God's side, It's beautiful. He tells us that whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all of your might. Go 100%. If it's worth doing, it's worth doing well. For there is no activity, planning, knowledge, or wisdom in, I paraphrase, the grave where you are going. For us, human ability cannot guarantee success. Wisdom is easily forgotten, and it is easily ignored. Strength is more impressive but less effective than wisdom. Human rulers will always outshout wise counseling. And remember that a fool prefers shouting. Sinners are trigger happy, but wisdom is better. Tony Dungy, the head coach of the Indianapolis Colts, lost his 18-year-old son to suicide at the end of the Colts' 2005 season. At the funeral services at Idlewood Baptist Church on December 27th, Dungy offered a heartbreaking appeal to fathers. God can provide joy in the midst of a sad occasion. And the challenge is to find that joy. I urge you not to take a relationship for granted. Parents, hug your kids each chance you get. Tell them that you love them with each chance that you get. You don't know when it's going to be that last time. Tony Dungy last saw his 18-year-old son, James, at Thanksgiving in Indianapolis. James was in a rush to get to the airport, and his father did not have a chance to hug him. In a brief interview with the media after the funeral, Coach Dungy says, "James was a young man with a compassionate heart. We were glad to have him for 18 years. We are also glad that he accepted Christ as his Savior, so that God has him now for the rest of eternity." James Dungy lived a spotted life, but the whole focus, the whole point of Tony's remembrance of James was that he had trusted Christ as Savior and was in God's hands. You too can provide joy to your loved ones by confessing and believing that Jesus Christ is your Savior. No matter what else happens, you've got that settled. No matter what else happens, you'll be in heaven. Have you trusted Christ as your Savior? Because that's the most important decision that you'll ever make.